Hello, friends. Welcome to the Logistics of Logistics podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. Thank you so much for joining us today. On the Logistics of Logistics, I talk to experts in logistics and transportation, warehousing, fulfillment, supply chain, and of course, technology. And during these interviews, I'm always the one asking the dumb questions. I ask the dumb questions so you don't have to. Today's topic is driving sales pipeline with my friend Jim Waters. Jim is the founder of Freight Tech, an advisory and fractional CMO service that helps logistics technology providers acquire more customers. In times like these, driving sales pipeline is the difference between surviving and thriving. If you want to thrive in these difficult times, please take a listen to my conversation with Jim Waters. Jim is the answer. How's it going, Jim?
Pretty good, Joe. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Jim, please introduce yourself and your company where you're calling from today.
Sure. Jim Waters, and I am an advisor with Freight Tech Advisors. I'm calling from Boston, Mass, and looking forward to talking about driving sales pipeline.
Very nice. Very nice. So what do you guys do over at Freight Tech Advisors?
So Freight Tech is an advisory service that only handles companies that are in technology for supply chains. We are focused on driving pipeline, top of funnel, and advising companies that are either seed round, pre-A, or pre-B. And we're driving a lot of business for these newer companies.
Now, how do you guys go about doing that? Are you a marketing company?
We are a marketing company. I consider myself a fractional CMO. I do come from the industry. Started with Tive, IoT devices, and real-time tracking. And I also worked in Final Mile with Freight, F-R-A-Y-T. So I do have a great background, and I do come from a family of folks that work in supply chain. Both my daughters work in supply chain as well. So we have a real love for the supply chain family.
Very nice. Very nice. So tell me those companies again, that where they're at in their evolution. You said pre-seed.
So one company that I'm working is pre-seed. So they're on their angel round of funding. And then I have two clients that are pre-A, and I have one client that is about to release their Series A in about a week.
But you'll work with companies who are somewhere else in there, say a company that says, hey, we're privately owned. You'll still work with them to help drive that sales pipeline?
100%.
Excellent. Excellent. And we'll get more into the how you drive sales pipeline in a minute. Tell me a little bit about you. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Some career highlights before you started Freight Tech.
Yeah, I grew up on Cape Cod, but I like to tell everybody that I was growing up in Boston. I went to Northeastern University for my MBA, which is a great school. A lot of great opportunities came out of going to Northeastern. I went into SaaS sales and marketing. I spent about 10 years in sales, owned my own data company at one point, worked in enterprise search at two different companies, one which was sold to Microsoft for $1.2 billion. So that was a great exit. And then I slowly began that journey into Freight Tech. I was fortunate enough to meet the CEO at Tive early on when they were pre-Series A. And I just remember telling him, I don't know anything about logistics. I don't know anything about shipping. And he said, nope, we're looking for somebody with SaaS software, sales and marketing experience, and you're the guy.
Excellent. The industry did change. So I won't interrupt you. Continue on with your journey before you started Freight Tech Advisors.
Yes. Before going into supply chain, I have always been working with data. So that's one of the good things that I understand. I understand how important data is. All my expertise is data driven. When I'm running programs or campaigns, it's not a feel thing. It's more, okay, we launched a campaign or a program. How did it do? What was the ROI based on what we did? What did we spend? What was the cost per lead? And I think with marketing being a science as well as an art, some marketers might get caught up in the art of being marketing. So I think it's important that having a sales background and having a marketing background, it helps me ground myself in the ROI portion of what we're trying to do for the companies that we represent.
Yep. So After Tive, where'd you go? And then when and why did you start Freightech?
So after Tive, where I was head of global marketing, by the way, for speaking of sales pipeline, we went from 5 million to around 55 million in 24 months.
Woo!
Yeah, you can see that we do, and I do, focus on top of funnel and then driving that active pipeline. And then after Tive, I went to a company called Freight, F-R-A-Y-T. Great bunch of folks. That is last mile, final mile shipping platform. Again, focused on top of funnel and active pipeline. We drove business from around 6.5 or 7 million. In 9 months, we made it to around 15 million in ARR. That was a really successful venture. And then coming off of Freight, I decided, you know what? There's a real need for fractional CMOs. I know it's a term that people have heard a lot and might not even understand. But what really drew me to start Freightech was I love working in the industry. I love working with pipeline, working with sales, and I wanted to do it for more than one company because I thought that there was a real need for companies that needed a CMO but might not need the additional expense of a full-time CMO. They really wanted things to get moving quickly, and that's where I saw that there was a fit, and that's why I launched Freightech.
Yep. Many years ago, I worked for a tech company out of Silicon Valley, and I remember at the time, they said, oh, this is so-and-so. He's our chief financial officer. And I was like, oh, didn't know we were big. We had 12 guys there. And I was like, I didn't know we were big enough for a CFO. And somebody said, oh, he's only here one day. He's only with us 20% of the time. And I was like, what? And I said, so he's an outside service? They go, huh? But he is our CFO. He is doing all the CFO stuff, but it's 12 people here. And it didn't make sense to have somebody who was getting a lot of money and being there full time and twiddling their thumbs sometimes. I think in our business, we talked a lot about this, is marketing has a place in the logistics space and in the freight tech space. And often marketing has this lesser role to sales. And when somebody says, what does sales do? Sales goes out and they drive the sales pipeline. And they're, in many of the stories, they are the hero of the story when it works. Right? They're, of course, when it doesn't work, they are not the heroes. They're the zeros. But marketing still sits at the kid table in a lot of cases. And people would, I think people listening go, wait, driving sales pipeline? How does a CMO drive sales pipeline? Isn't that what the heroes over in sales do? So please elaborate. I know, by the way, I'm of the opinion that, and I think you are too, sales and marketing just seem to be growing together. And it's hard to separate where sales begins and marketing begins and vice versa. So please elaborate on that for a moment.
Yeah. So the fractional piece, as you said, with the fractional CFO, and he's only there or she's only there 20% of the time, that can actually be an asset, right? So because you're getting top tier expertise without the risk of they're going to be there for 3 months or 6 months and then they're going to bounce, or your onboarding process takes 60 days. So they're not going to be up to speed. They're not going to be making a real contribution, say, to bottom line or to top of funnel very quickly. So one of the things that Freightech and I work on is the speed at which I can jump in and make an immediate impact. And what I mean by that is with the Freightech people that I work with and the supply chain companies that I work with, we get to bypass that lengthy learning curve of a new hire, right? So because I know the industry and because I know folks like you and anyone I can reach out to that can help me do my job for the company, that's part of that lessening that lengthy curve, right? So a fractional CMO can assess things quickly, identify some gaps, and then implement actionable strategies. And for me, it's not all about the theories of what should and shouldn't happen. It's jumping right in and making sure that we're creating that top of funnel, which for sales means active pipeline, which drives bottom line sales.
Yep. And Jim, this, anyone in our business knows this, a lot of people are sending work to the Philippines or to Colombia and Belize, Mexico, and that's great. It can get you top talent, maybe for less money, but I will always argue that talent, those, we're going to develop really deep talent pools in those areas, and it's not going to be just about saving money, but a lot of times it's about saving money. So I know many companies are moving marketing to overseas, and which I'm not against. I'm all for it. Go ahead. The challenge I have with that, and I think most companies are going to run into the same problem, is you need somebody to steer the ship, and that is not going to be some outsourced resource who's paid a lot less and maybe is a junior person. So I think we still need somebody with the experience and the expertise to come in, as you said, make a quick assessment and say, here's where I can fill in. And I have no administrative, I'm not building a team here. I'm not doing anything other than say, where do I fit in? What do you want me to do? And then let me execute, as opposed to, yeah, I'm building up my team and I'm going to go find an outside agency. Maybe you're hired for that, but this is more concrete when you say, I'm going to be here with you guys 20%, 50% of the time. I don't have time to build the team. That's going to be, maybe that's your role, but you can be very focused. And I'm sure that's probably a relief to you in many cases.
Yeah, there's definitely more advantages to having a fractional CMO or a fractional head of marketing. And one of those is cost, right? So think about scaling up and scaling down. Instead of scaling up and then finding that, hey, you know what, we didn't hit our quarterly goal or we didn't hit our yearly goal, and then we have to let people go. My business is helping that company and then avoiding those pitfalls. So as you said, building a team, that's great. Strategy, awesome. You do need a marketing strategy. But if you're missing those tactics that support those strategies and you don't get those rolling, that's where you get this huge timeline of 2 or 3 months where you have to have somebody creating content. You have to have somebody buying media. You have to, there's all these things that need to be done, but those are on the tactical side. That's outside of the strategy, right? You've got your company objectives, you've got your marketing strategy, and then you've got to kick off those tactics. And what we typically do at Freight Tech is we do that inside of 30 days. So we'll get your objectives, we'll do a lean canvas exercise, figure out where it is that you are, where you want to be, what are your sales goals for the quarter, the half, the year, and then we begin to fill in those blanks within 30 days. So you're not paying for something that you can't scale back should you feel that you need to scale back, but you're definitely delivering on sales leads, top of funnel, and sales active pipeline.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're more than happy to have customers for years and years, but it does make it a little easier if you say, let me jump in, let me have an impact. And then maybe when you we'll do a campaign or two or whatever you want me to do, and let me fade to the back for a little while, and then you have me back next year at the beginning of the year to jumpstart stuff. But my feeling is we're going to see a lot of this in the future, where I need the experienced hand to help me do the set the direction for whatever it is we're trying to do. And in this case, we're going to talk about driving sales pipeline. And then that's not going to be direction set by somebody who's inexpensive. It's going to be somebody more expensive, and that's why it's called a CMO. But maybe you want to say, hey, I want Jim to set the direction, and then I want some people who are overseas to do some of this, no disrespect to any of these jobs, do a lot of that HubSpot stuff that's in the background, that's behind the scenes. It all has to be done, but I don't necessarily need a CMO to do that for me.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Everything is important. Not everything is a priority. So when we set up that marketing ecosystem, it has to be set up correctly, right? With the HubSpots and the Salesforce.com and the website, do you use Webflow? There's so many different things that you have to have in that ecosystem to even start. And a lot of these companies don't know where to start. So they're happy to bring somebody in that not only knows logistics and logistics tech, but also knows the marketing sphere. And when it comes to, like you were saying, Joe, content creation, and especially, and I don't want to go down the AI path because we're driving pipeline and talking about marketing, but having someone that understands freight technology is really important. Yes, you can have somebody write a blog, or you can have somebody write LinkedIn posts. However, if they don't understand the nuances of shipping and multimodal and visibility, they're going to get hung up, and you're not going to get what HubSpot calls creative content or remarkable content. So I think that offshoring, nearshoring is fine, but not to get rolling. To get started, you have to have a great ecosystem.
Somebody's going to set the direction with senior management, and that is not going to be somebody who was brought on, who's probably younger and not part of the industry. So anyway, the other day, I wanted to introduce you to, I was talking to a friend, and they, a founder of a company, and they said, Joe, who can I hire that will help me grow? And I said, I would talk to Jim Waters. And then I made that introduction via email, and you sent an email, and it was very, very concise. So there was three things that you said you did. And it was, when my first thought when I think of marketing is and again, I consider myself a marketer, but sometimes we can get, and it's not even wrong, but it can feel very esoteric. It can feel very out there. But what you wrote was three things. And I want to go over all three of these. What you wrote, I do demand creation, active pipeline, and how much of that did you close? And I was like, oh, doesn't sound like a marketer here. But it's to your point, sales and marketing is growing together, and marketing has to hold itself to that higher standard. So I want to talk about each one of these and get into a little detail. So first off, what is demand creation?
So it might mean something a little bit different to everybody, but at the highest level, demand creation is creating inbound inquiries, probably on your website, could be on your LinkedIn page as well. You need a constant pipeline of great content that is not a commercial about your product, your people, your company, but rather it's content that is helping people that can't figure out what to do as far as solving problems for themselves or for their customers. So a playbook, how do I get digitized? What about digitalization? What's the first step in real-time visibility? It means something different to everyone, but coming up with these playbooks, coming up with this content that helps people do better business is really important. And that brings demand in, meaning I want to schedule a discovery session, or tell me about your pricing, or let me have a 30-minute meeting so I can tell you about what the issues are that we're having that we think you might be able to solve for us.
So this is also the top of the funnel. So this is how you're creating demand. And the way you create demand is, we all know now that I think we've all been trained, if I have a problem, Google it, and you'll realize that a lot of other people have that problem. And then you want to find content and go, oh, I just typed in new TMS or TMS that'll work for loggers or whatever it is. And all of a sudden, there's all sorts of opportunities. And what you want to see when you type in TMS for loggers, you want to see a TMS custom built for loggers, right? And you want to click on that and you go, oh boy, that's the TMS I need, because that's all we do. And they say, contact me, or they download a white paper, or they reach out to you on LinkedIn, right? So what else is there? That was an easy example because it's very specific. What are you doing when somebody says, I need more demand, I need more top of the funnel? What are you doing to get that for them?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Joe. And in most cases, what I do find when I start with a new client is, they don't have a library of content that can be used to draw people in. It's not necessarily pushing that content out, it's pulling people towards that content. So when you're writing a blog, or you're interviewing with you or with someone else in the media. All that is great content, because when people are Googling and they're doing some searches on, say, predicting OTIF, right, on time in full, what content is going to come up? And if you are an expert in predicting OTIF, you want your stuff to raise to the top. So it's important that that creation of all of that content is not only timely, but it's everywhere that your personas are going to be looking, they're going to be reading, they're going to be listening. And it's important that you set that milestone right off the bat.
Yep. Jim, one of the things I haven't talked about it lately on the podcast, but there's this idea of the dark funnel, which is people who are looking at your brand. So let's just say you're dissatisfied with your current transportation management system, and you're thinking, we're going to have to get a new one. It's a giant decision, a pain in the ass to go through it. We got enough things going on, but I'm going to need a new TMS. So I'm hovering around a whole bunch of TMS companies. I don't want to reach out, because as soon as I say, hey, I'm interested in a new TMS, now I get the full court press for the next 60 days. And so we all know that. So we avoid that. But what we are doing is we're consuming some of their content. You might not download something because, again, they're going to call you. They're going to call you and maybe send you a text message at 3 a.m. saying, hey, Jim, are you still interested in our TMS? When are you ready to buy? And all you're doing is kicking the tires and trying to understand what's out in the market. And I always consider the podcasting as a dark funnel. People can get to know Jim Waters without ever talking to Jim Waters. And if they do listen to the whole podcast, and by the way, they should always do, and they go, oh, I like that guy. I like that guy. I have the problems that he described, and it sounds like he can solve them. It's a lot easier to get to know somebody in that dark funnel with a podcast, but it's not the only way. What are some other ways you go about getting people to make themselves visible to you and your brand?
Yeah, that's part of the marketing challenge. As you said, everyone's always either afraid to download something. They might be looking for a new TMS or a new WMS. And as soon as you download something, the phone's going to ring and they say, oh, I noticed you downloaded the paper. Is there anything else I can answer for you? I didn't read it yet. I just downloaded it 5 minutes ago. So I agree with you, Joe, that there's a lot of different ways that you can get this content without necessarily downloading something and then firing off someone's email that's looking to close a deal. So some of the other ways are getting your content out on syndication, submitting it to different portals where people are already signed up and they can download as much content as they want. So I think the real opportunity here is not always gating your content, but making sure that your company is considered a subject matter expert on TMS or WMS. And not only that, but you're extolling the virtues of what your particular technology does to help people. And that's really what people are looking for. It's not that they want to read a 14-page white paper on TMS and WMS. What they really want to know is what's new, what's modern, what has switched gears and I've been left behind. And I need to get ahead of that technology. That's where I think.
And when you say gated, that means you don't have to give your phone number or anything. So it just says download this. No email required. No credit card required. No telephone number.
Correct. Yeah. Gated. Things are gated still. And I don't disagree with gating some high value assets like a Gartner Magic.
Right. Water. A research. Yeah.
Yeah. Research stuff has to be gated. But if you're going to publish a white paper or say a playbook, I love playbooks. It's if you're experiencing this problem, here's 3 or 4 different ways that people have solved that problem. That's really what people are looking for, is who is like me, who is in the position that I am in, and they've already seen this problem and they're able to get past it.
So getting back to it, this demand creation is attracting people to your company and getting them to show themselves at some point. And again, while we are all in sales and all saying, yes, if somebody is showing interest, I want to show interest back. Sometimes it's, I'm just wandering aimlessly looking at a number of companies and you're chasing me. That gets annoying, but I think that's just, that's human interaction. And say, if it's not the right time, well, it won't bother you. When I was at Manifest, not this year, the year before last, I went to a VC party and I had interviewed like 7 people who were at that party. We were having a drink and just talking. And one of the guys said, every time somebody interviews with me now, they mention my appearance on your podcast. And I was like, oh, and then another guy, the other founder said, oh my God, that's so true. Every person who interviews here now says, oh yeah, I know you a little bit because I listened to that podcast. And that's job hunting, obviously. But I also think, how many customers listened to you and got to know you that way? I like to think that's, I know it works sometimes. It's the challenge with all of this is you create a podcast. Time is money. You're spending time, effort, money to do these things. How do I know I'm going to get return on investment? Because one way, if I say I wrote a lot of white papers, and when I wrote white papers for people or myself, you get emails, addresses, and go, here it is. Here it is. Give it to the sales guys. Now they can send an email. We'll put them on the email list. Victory. It's not a sale. Maybe all we did was alienate them with our full court press when all they wanted was to read our white paper.
Yeah, no, it's too bad that things are like that. And I do understand why they're like that. But that's why freight tech and the way I work is ROI, right? So if you go to a trade show, I can't tell you how many trade shows I've done with clients. And we went to Manifest with one client. And they said, how many deals did we get out of the show? And it's, you won't know that for 30 to 60 to 90 days, but it's more, how many meaningful conversations did you have? You and I were at Manifest this year and we met up, and how many meaningful conversations did you introduce me into and I introduced you into? So it's not necessarily, it's the top of the funnel. So you had those 16, 18, 24 conversations. And then the real magic is when did they get past step number one in a 7-step sales pipeline? And that's how I look at ROI. It's not, did we close the deal, but did we get in the active pipeline? Did we get 6 of those 18 to 22 conversations in the active pipeline? And a lot of marketers don't look at things like that.
Yep. And I will say another thing, Jim, and again, I'm bragging on podcasts for a moment. When I'm selling, people know me. So when people end up on my calendar, they go, oh yeah, I listen to your podcast, or I've listened, or I know of. It's, and so creating content sometimes makes you at least a little bit known by the people you're talking to, which is very helpful. So we talked about demand creation, which could be a lot of different things. That's why you need a CMO to come in and help, but that's the top of the funnel. The next one you talk about is this active pipeline. And that means they showed themselves. You had the first meeting with them, and now they still show interest. You put them in your active pipeline, as opposed to saying, we disqualified them or they disqualified us. They're not going to work.
Correct. Usually step one is they're a lead, right? So they showed some type of interest. There was some type of flag that said, this may be a person that you want to talk to at a company that you want to do business with. And they probably have enough money to buy your solution. So that's step number one. Step number two is usually a discovery call, right? So they've decided, yes, they want to talk to you. You want to talk to them. You set a 45 to an hour call to go through. What is it that you're experiencing as a challenge? And let us take a deeper dive into how we've helped other people to do or come up with a solution to the exact same problem or a problem that's very similar to that. That actually kicks off the active pipeline, right? Yes, you have to come up with more things to qualify that company, and they do for you as well. But now you're down into steps 2 and 3 out of probably 6 or 7, 7 being closed lost, or it can be closed won. And a lot of times people aren't looking at the closed lost deals in a fashion that we can learn something. We went all the way through the selling cycle and we lost. Why is that? Was it price? Was it features, functionality? Was it, it just wasn't a good fit? So it's important to look at the pipeline, but not just the, not the active win pipeline, but you need to track your losses and find out why you're losing.
Yep. Jim, there's so much software now that we're all using, CRMs and HubSpot and all these tools, which are all great. One of my thoughts sometimes is I use my own CRM is sometimes you lose the meaning of what some of these things are because it's almost like it becomes a IT function within your business. And you're not looking and saying this loss, oh, it's just, no, it just moved over here in this software. And I'm not against the software. I know you aren't either. It's just as soon as you start using the software, we become more efficient. And but we want to also become more effective, meaning we're going to get more of the desired results. Efficiency is how do I do it with less resources? Effectiveness is how do I get the desired result, which is a sale?
Yeah. Again, it depends on where the company is. And I go back to, are they angel round, seed round, pre-A? And the reason I bring that up is because sometimes when I come on as a fractional CMO, the only salespeople are maybe the COO and the CEO, or maybe just right. the CEO. When I went to when I went into IoT devices, the only person that was selling was the CEO. So yes, there was some big wins and some really significant wins, but it wasn't scalable. So sometimes I have to look at where is the company. If I'm going to create top of funnel, say 300 or 400 leads per month, let's assume that 30% of those are actually A leads. Let's call it A leads. They might not be able to handle that amount of inbound top of funnel. So I have to match where the company is or where my client company is in their growth cycle so that we're not overwhelming people or driving people to a website where we just don't have the ability to get back to those people. And that can be an issue as well.
So when we're talking about how much did you close of that active pipeline, very important, obviously, that this is why we play the game is to close some business. I will say I know my own situation where people are on my calendar, I meet with them, that's the discovery call. Then there's a follow-up call usually. And if you don't follow up on a timely basis, they leaves their mind, right? And it seems as if if you have a good discovery call and you don't have a good follow-up plan, it just all falls apart. And that's, I think we've all experienced that where you go, oh my God, I didn't call that guy on a timely basis. Sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes it really matters, right? And sometimes, and again, I think people listening to this podcast will say this, we have turnover in our space. So a lot of times, if you're selling to somebody who's buying a technology, the people you're selling to might be leaving every quarter, so it just falls apart. And I've experienced that. A lot of turnover in our space. And if you can't get it closed, it's like you start over again. And I've experienced that not only at my own company, but at others, where it's just, hey, that's a sales cycle's a year. And sometimes it is in this business because they said, we need that technology, but this is not the right time to do it. So keep us on your list, but we're not buying it right now.
Yep. Yeah, it happens all the time. And but it happens to me, it happens to you. But I think that's where brand and awareness comes in. So if you think about your own podcast, Joe, people think all the time, logistics of logistics, right? That's where I'm going to go. That's where I'm going to get my news from. That's where I'm going to hear from people that I want to hear from that are solving problems that I want to solve. And if it doesn't get into a sales cycle, people are still going to think about that brand, Logistics of Logistics, and it's a podcast, and it's got tens of thousands of followers. That's where the brand is really important. If you're not closing the business, it's not fine, but the value hasn't been wasted in that sales cycle because somebody at that company does know that those conversations were taking place.
Yeah, I've had calls where a lot of people say, oh, we send our new people to listen to your podcast. And my founders have said that, hey, when I wasn't from logistics and I learned it on your podcast, which is always gratifying, but it's also a leg up when you're trying to sell something. So I know you mentioned some ideal companies that you might work with. And I know you mentioned all those kinds of VC-backed companies, but let's just say somebody's listening to the podcast. They say, I got 25 people working for me and I want to get to that next level. And they might have somebody who's the kind of marketing, but also other responsibilities and doesn't have your experience. What's the process look like when you engage with them? They say, Jim, we want to get to that next level. We want to drive this sales pipeline. Help us. What's the process look like?
Yeah, the process that's worked for me and for my client companies to date has been what I use as a lean canvas. And anyone can Google lean canvas.
Yep, I got one of those.
And it's literally a 30 to 45 minute session for either yourself or your team, where you come up with, what are the basics of my business? Where do I make my money? How many sales do I have to do to break even? And once you answer these questions, then you know where you should focus, right? So one of my clients is a visibility provider, and they were wondering, should I be in perishable cold chain or should I be in pharma cold chain? And doing that lean canvas, it came up with a lot of those answers, right? Do you want to spend 80% of your time going after pharma, which is a 9 to 12 month sales cycle, or would you rather work and focus 80% of your time on cold chain perishables, which is food and beverage, which has a 2 to 3 month selling cycle, but the deals are smaller? So that the lean canvas is really where I start. And then I look at the ecosystem. So do you have the ecosystem available and in place to handle that demand once we start to create it? And then do you have your selling process in place? So do you have direct salespeople? Do you have channel salespeople ready to jump on these sales calls as they're happening? So there are some ABCs to setting up this ecosystem, and there definitely is a process that I use. And not everybody uses the same process, but again, I tie everything back to active pipeline. What did we win and what did we lose? And that's the true ROI of what we're after.
Yeah, I like that. And Jim, I think most of the criticism, and I'm sure you've heard it because you've been in the space for a while, most of the criticism you hear of marketing is, oh, they're doing something. I don't know what they do over there. And the sales team will say, I don't get enough good leads from marketing. And then I sometimes hear people say, well, it's not marketing's job to give you leads. I would like your 2 cents on that. Is it marketing's responsibility to feed the sales team leads to follow up on? And how do you view this relationship between what should be joined at the hip, but sometimes isn't, these two groups? They're not joined.
No, those are great questions and great points. So I think personally that it's a 50-50 relationship between sales and marketing. And I say that because I've been in sales and I know what good leads are and I know what bad leads are. So I would say that most great salespeople that I have worked with, they do their own account-based marketing. So they know people in the space, they have a contact list, they know people, they're active on LinkedIn. So they're doing that account-based marketing into the companies that they know are going to be a good fit. They are flanked by great marketing. And that marketing can include branding, it can include podcasts, it can include blog articles, it can include a lot of different things that are going to help them sell. And at the same time, they're bringing in active pipeline, they're bringing in top of funnel and demand at the same time that they're doing account-based marketing. So I would say I'm of the school, it's kind of 50-50, but I have been at companies where sales was responsible for 80% of their own lead gen. And I've flipped that around and also been at companies where 80% of the leads have to come from marketing, and that's a KPI.
Yep. It's very interesting. If I'm a marketer at all, I'm a content marketer. That's what I consider myself. And I remember years ago, I was at a trucking company and I was doing a webinar. And what I learned about doing webinars is after the webinar, you don't get to talk to all the people you want to talk to. But if you call ahead of time, so people would sign up, and that's just one of the people I was very interested in working with. I called them ahead of time and I talked to this gal and she was very short with me. She not impolite, but very short. Just, sorry, sir, I don't have time for this, blah, blah, blah. Hung up. The next morning when I got into work, there was an email from her and she said, Joe, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize who I was talking to yesterday. Please give me a call this morning. And I thought, oh, I'm just doing a webinar, but I gained a lot of credibility in her eyes because we were doing, it was on cross-border shipping. And she was very interested in cross-border. She was coming to that webinar. And I thought, oh, I learned a little lesson there that I built my status up a little bit. And she almost felt, oh, this is almost like an obligation to talk to Joe because he's doing a webinar that I'm attending. By the way, right after the webinar, people have a lot less interest in talking to you. That's my takeaway about webinars. Identify those 5 or 10 people who are going to be great customers or who you'd like to be great customers. Reach out to them ahead of time and say, hey, Jim, I noticed you signed up for my webinar. I'm just curious, what are you trying to learn from that webinar? And you say blank and blank. And it's not a sales call at that point. It's just, I want to understand what I should be doing for the webinar.
Yeah.
Way better deal.
100%. Yeah. If people are on a webinar, they're there for a reason. And you can ask the question at the end of this webinar, what do you want to happen? And most people would say, I want a solution to my problem or my challenge, or I want to do this, or I want to learn that. And I think that's a great approach.
Yep. Jim, I'm going to summarize all this and I want you to put a big old bow on this one. We're talking about my friend Jim Waters. We're talking about driving sales pipeline. We're talking about Jim's CMO, fractional CMO business, Freight Tech. And we talked really about 3 big areas, which is what you guys do: demand creation or top of the funnel, active pipeline. That's getting past that first stage. And how much do you close and how do you close that? Final thoughts on this one, Jim Waters.
So my final thought is, if growth and scaling are your goals at your company, whether it's pre-seed, seed, round A, round B, but your resources are either limited or you want to keep your options open with your cash burn, I really think that a fractional CMO is the way to go. It's ideally a 3 to 4 or 6 month engagement, and that can be an engagement that helps you build your internal team, or it can be getting your top of funnel moving. But I think that it's an investment that you're going to want to make. And it's the smartest way to leverage high-level marketing talent and people that have been working not only in supply chain and freight tech, people that have been working in marketing and sales for 20 or 25 years. I really think that to be agile, and especially in 2020, the freight tech market is going to be very, very agile, especially from June on. I think that fractional CMO is a viable option for a lot of different companies.
Yep. Jim, everyone I talk to, and I talk to a lot of people, not just on the podcast, but off the podcast, everybody's trying to get to that next level, whatever that next level is. We want to get to 1.5 million. We want to get to 20 million. Whatever it is, there's something that we have to do. And the challenge, I say this to myself, I say it to others, the challenge is, what got you to that million might not get you to 5 million. What got you to 5 million won't take you to 10 million. It helps to have somebody who said, I've already done this. I've done it multiple times and I can help you get to, because everybody's trying to get to that next level. And in this very difficult market over the last 2 years, selling technology into logistics and supply chain, when a lot of people have got their budgets cut, is not easy, but we still have to do that job.
Yeah. And I'll end with one of the things that I say to people on my discovery calls is, I help you do 2 things. I help you do more of the right things, and I help you avoid the wrong things. And either one of those things or both can make or break your business.
I love it. I love it. So Jim, I'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile, link to your website, and any other links you give me. Jim writes a ton of articles. If you're not already connected to him on LinkedIn, you should get connected to him on LinkedIn or at least follow him on LinkedIn. And Jim, what conferences will we see you and the fine folks from Freight Tech at?
So the next public appearance will be at the Gartner Supply Chain Summit in Florida. I think that's May 6, 7, and 8. And of course, I'm always at the fall conferences. And I am looking forward to another great Manifest already. I know a lot of us do go to Manifest. There's just some great industry events that we'll be looking at for the fall, probably taking the summer off after the Gartner Summit.
Yep, I don't. I'm also going to see you at TMSA, Transportation Marketing Sales Association, down in New Orleans in June.
Yes, sir.
Hope it's warm enough down there.
Yeah, I hope so.
I live in the Midwest, so I'm of the opinion that there should be lots of conferences in the winter when it's cold, and those should be in warm places. And then when it's nice in the summer and fall, just leave us alone. Let us stay at home. That's not the way the industry works.
Yep, stay out of Phoenix in the summertime.
That's right. So again, Jim, I really love what you guys are doing. I think it is so critically important now to get that right direction, because sales and marketing, if you can do a lot of busy work, trust me, I do it myself sometimes, where you go, am I getting anywhere? And sometimes if you don't know the direction to go because you've never done it before, you just need that, let me orient you the right way. And then I'll give you a shove. And I'll come back in a few months to help you do it again, or I'll stick around one day a week. Whatever it is, we all need that guide, that expertise that'll help us get to that next level that we're all looking to get to.
Yes, sir.
Jim, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks again for having me on, Joe. It's always a pleasure.
Yep. And thank all of you for listening to my podcast. Your support's very much appreciated. Until next time, onward and upward.
You have been listening to the Logistics of Logistics podcast, where we engage with leaders in the logistics and supply chain community. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, hit the like button, and leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you listen. Also, please check out our videos on YouTube and connect with us on LinkedIn. We're very big on LinkedIn. And you can also reach us on the logisticsoflogistics.com, our website.